They do not start from ideas, but from earthly life and needs. They are particularly close in their appraisal of consciousness, which is seen by both as less the driving force behind human behavior than the reflection of other hidden forces. But when it comes to the nature of the factors that truly conditions man's consciousness, there seem to be an irreconcilable opposition between the two theories. Historical materialism sees consciousness as the expression of social existence. Psychoanalysis sees it as determined by instinctual drives. Certain questions are unavoidable. Do the two views contradict each other? Page 482. If not, how are they related? Can the use of the psychoanalytical method enrich historical materialism? If so, how? Before we discuss these questions, however, it seems necessary to examine the presupposition that psychoanalysis brings to a study of societal problems. Footnote 6, text. Freud never assumed isolated men devoid of all social ties to be the object of psychology. Individual psychology, to be sure, is concerned with the individual human being, and it examines the way in which he tries to satisfy his instinctual drives, but only rarely and under specific exceptional circumstances. Is it in a position to abstract from this person relationships with other individuals? In the individual's psychic life, other people ordinarily must be considered as either models, objects, helpers, or opponents. Thus, from the beginning, individual psychology is simultaneously social psychology in this extended but legitimate sense. Footnote 7, text. On the other hand, Freud basically ruled out the illusion of a social psychology whose object is a group of, as such, society or a social complex with a mass soul or societal soul. Rather, he always proceeded from the fact that every group is composed only of individuals and that only the individual as such is the subject of psychic properties. Freud likewise refused to accept the notion of a social instinct. What people called the social instinct, he felt, was not a primitive elemental instinct. He sees the origin of its development in a narrow circle, such as the family. His views lead to the conclusion that the social attributes owe their origin, intensification, and diminution to the influence of specific living conditions and environmental relations on the instincts. Just as for Freud, it is always socialized man who is the object of psychology, so he sees man's environment and living conditions playing a decisive role in his psychic development and in our theoretical understanding of it. Freud recognized the biological and physiological influence of the instincts, but he specifically emphasized to what degree these instincts would be modified, and he pointed to the environment, social reality as the modifying factor. Thus, psychoanalysis seemed to include presuppositions that make its method useful for investigation in social psychology and that rule out any conflict with sociology. It seeks to know the psychic traits common to the members of a group and to explain these common psychic traits in terms of shared life experiences. Page 483. These life experiences, however, do not lie in the realm of the personal or the accidental. The larger the group is, the more this holds true, but rather they are identical with the socio-economic situation of this particular group. Thus, analytical social psychology seeks to understand the instinctual apparatus of a group its libidinous and largely unconscious behavior in terms of its socio-economic structure. Here, an objection seems to be in order. Psychoanalysis explains instinctual development in terms of the life experiences of the earliest childhood years. That is to say, in terms of a period when the human being scarcely has anything to do with society, but lives almost exclusively in the circle of his family. How then, according to psychoanalytic theory, can socio-economic relationships acquire such significance? There is no real problem here at all. Of course, the first critical influence on the growing child comes from the family, but the family itself, all its typical internal emotional relationships, and the educational ideals it embodies are in turn conditioned by the social and class background of the family. In short, they are conditioned by the social structure in which it is rooted. For example, the emotional relationship between father and son are quite different in the family that is part of a bourgeois patriarchal society than they are in the family that is part of a matriarchal society. The family is the medium through which the society or the social class stamps its specific structure of the child and hence on the adult. The family is the psychological agency of society. Up to now, the vast majority of psychoanalytical works which have tried to apply psychoanalysis to social problems have not met the requirements incumbent on any analytical social psychology. Footnote 8, text. Their failure begins in their assessment of the family's function. They saw clearly enough that the individual can only be understood as a socialized being. They realized that it is the child's relationship with the various family members that have a decisive influence on his instinctual development, but they have almost completely overlooked the fact that the family itself, in its whole psychological and social structure, with all its specific educational goals and emotional attitudes, is the product of a specific social and, in a narrower sense, class structure, that it is, in fact, simply the psychological agency of the society and class from which it comes. They had found the correct starting point for explaining the psychological influence of society on the child, but failed to take notice of it. Page 484. How was that possible? The psychoanalytic investigators were simply duped by a prejudice that they shared with every bourgeois investigator, even those who were progressive. They had turned bourgeois capitalist society into an absolute, and they more or less consciously believed that it was the normal society, that its conditions and psychic factors were typical for society in general. But there was another special reason why the analytical authors fell into this error. The object of their investigations were, first and foremost, sick and healthy members of modern society, and largely of the middle classes. In short, they were members of the bourgeoisie class. Footnote 9, text. With the same social background, what determined and differentiated their individual lives then were the individual, personal, and from a social standpoint, accidental experiences above this generally shared foundation. All the persons studied shared the same psychic traits, insofar as these traits were the product of an authoritarian society organized around the fact of class structure and the methodical pursuit of maximal profit. They differed psychologically only insofar as one had an overly strict father who terrified him in childhood, another had an older sister who was the focus for all his love, and still another had such an overpossessive mother that he was never able to break his libidinal ties with her. To be sure, these personal experiences were the utmost importance for the development of the individual concerned. By removing the psychic problems that had arisen from these experiences, psychoanalysis did its full duty as a therapy. It transformed the patient into a human being who was now adjust to the existing social order. The goal of therapy did not go beyond that, nor did it have to. Unfortunately, our theoretical understanding of the whole situation did not get beyond that either. Neglect of the social structure which conditioned the family structure may have been a source of error, but it was irrelevant in actual practice for individual psychology. When it came to research in social psychology, however, what had once been an irrelevant mistake now became a disastrous source of error affecting the whole endeavor. Footnote 10. Text. Psychoanalysis had focused on the structure of bourgeois society and its patriarchal family as the normal situation. Following the approach of individual psychology, it had learned to appreciate individual differences in terms of the fortuitous trauma that befell individual men. In the beginning, psychoanalytic researchers explained the various phenomena of social psychology in a corresponding way. They viewed them in terms of traumas of socially fortuitous events. This necessarily led to a reunion of the authentic analytical method. Page 485. Since they did not concern themselves with the variety of life experiences, the socio-economic structure of other types of society, and therefore did not try to explain their psychic structure as determined by their social structure, they necessarily began to analogize instead of analyzing. They treated mankind or a given society as an individual, transposed the specific mechanism found in contemporary individuals to every possible type of society, and explained the psychic structure of these societies by analogy with certain phenomena, usually of a neurotic sort, typically of human beings in their own society. In doing this, they overlooked a point of view that is fundamental even to psychoanalytic individual psychology. They forgot the fact that neurosis, whether a neurotic symptom or a neurotic character trait, results from the abnormal individual's faulty adaptation of his instinctual drives to the reality around him. Most people in a society, that is, the healthy people, do possess this ability to adapt. Thus, phenomena studied in social or mass psychology cannot be explained by analogy with neurotic phenomena. They should be understood as the result of the adaptation of the instinctual apparatus to the social reality. The most striking example of this procedure is the absolutization of the Oedipus complex, which was made into a universal human mechanism. Even so, sociological and ethnological studies indicated that this particular emotional relationship was probably typical only of families in patriarchal society. The absolutizing of the Oedipus complex led Freud to base the whole development of mankind on the mechanism of father hatred and the resultant reactions. Footnote 11. Text. Without any regard for the material living conditions of the group under study. Even when he started from a false sociological standpoint, however, a genius like Freud was able to make worthwhile and significant discoveries. Footnote 12. Text. But in the work of other analytical authors, this false starting point led to results which compromised psychoanalysis in the eyes of sociology and of Marxist social theory in particular. But the blame did not rest with the psychoanalysis as such. In fact, one only had to apply the classical method of psychoanalytic individual psychology in a logical way to social psychology in order to arrive at results that would meet with no objections. The fault was that the psycho